Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It's about that time. Happy Tuesday, mid-Michigan and wherever you may be watching or listening to the show right now. That's right. We are now live here on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. You may be tuned in watching the live stream at facebook.com/WKAR News. However you're listening, however you're watching, thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of your May 7th, 2019. It is a bit chilly outside. Rainy. The rain is expected to continue throughout the week. So, folks, stay dry, stay warm. Good news is, come the weekend, it looks to clear up, and we may have another weekend, a duplicate weekend of what we saw last weekend, where it was pretty much picture perfect throughout the weekend. So, let's just get to the weekend. But until then, it's Tuesday, and we plan on bringing some sunshine to your Tuesday by hitting you with a very entertaining hour of WKAR's Current Sports. On today's show, we're going to piggyback on a conversation that we had on Monday, centered on the Kentucky Derby. Now, if you've been living under a rock and don't know, the Kentucky Derby on Saturday night was pretty controversial because it looked like the runaway favorite in the Derby was going to take home the dub. But that did not happen. As Maximum Security, there was a review that took place after the race in which it looked like Maximum Security was going to win. And looking back on film, we saw that the horse, Maximum Security, went out of its lane and impeded at least three horses that I counted from, you know, trying to challenge Maximum Security for the lead. So Racing Stewards disqualified Maximum Security, thus elevating Country House to the winner's circle following objections filed by two jockeys. Now, there has been some breaking news that occurred literally, what, like 7 minutes before we hit the airwaves just now. News breaking here that Bill Mott, the trainer of Kentucky Derby controversial winner, Country House, he told the Daily Racing Form that Country House will not race in the Preakness Stakes. The reason being, well, the horse has become ill. The horse is sick. Country House is sick. That's what's being reported. Again, Bill Mott, the trainer of Country House, who came initially as the runner-up across the finish line, was then crowned as champion due to Maximum Security getting disqualified. Country House has become ill. And this is a direct quote coming from Mott. And again, this interview with the Daily Racing Form by telephone. Quote, he developed a little bit of cough this morning. His appetite is good. He doesn't have a fever, but he's coughing. We drew blood. He's acting like he's going to get sick. He's off the training list. And if he's off the training list, he's off the Preakness list. So you heard my thoughts on this story yesterday. of course, without this new development, this new chapter. And to help this conversation, we are going to welcome to the show, live here in Studio West, Michigan State professor Brian Nielsen from the Department of Animal Science. You know, Brian, in his career, he has been involved with the horse racing industry and has been a licensed racehorse trainer dating back to 1997. Nielsen will join me live in the studio to get his take on what happened on Saturday. We'll get his thoughts on this new development. And I really thought that with everything that's taken place, you know, with the controversial decision, you know, bumping Country House up as the winner in the Kentucky Derby, and now this newest development, I'm just sitting there saying to myself, why not just run the race over? You know, the ratings would be through the roof. This has elevated the conversation when it comes to the Kentucky Derby and horse racing here in America. There's a lot of eyeballs and ears centered right on this story. Boy, if they had a rematch, there would be so many people that would watch, so much money, so much more money, I believe, would funnel into that rematch. It would be so much hype surrounded around it, but that's just me putting on my businessman cap, all right? But we'll get the thoughts of Brian Nielsen. You don't want to miss that conversation. I'll also touch on the XFL landing a multi-year deal. This take two, I guess you can say, when it comes to Vince McMahon's XFL, could prove to be a successful one due to this multi-year television deal. I'll expound upon that. I'll touch on the NBA playoffs and what we saw last night in two compelling games, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Boston Celtics going at it in game one. And then later on that night, I stayed up pretty late checking out the Golden State Warriors and Houston Rockets series. Again, the Golden State Warriors, they own the basketball world, but the Rockets have stormed back to now tie that series at two games apiece. And then on the back end of the show, I'll elaborate more on a story concerning Le'Veon Bell, former Michigan State running back great, who has decided to skip workouts. I'll give you an update on that story actually right now as a part of our current sports quick hit headliners. All right, and I want to start here with the Michigan State women's golf team. The Michigan State women's golf team is in a tie right now for fourth place after Monday's opening round of the NCAA East Lansing Regional at Forest Acres West. The Spartans shot a 5 over par 293, which is tied with Indiana. Kent State, the region's number 3 seed, leads the field at 6 under par, a 282. Arizona is 2 over par, a 290 for AZ in second place, followed by Illinois in third at 4 over par, a 292. And can we double check, guys? I'm not sure how that, if that round has been suspended for today due to the weather outside, but if we can maybe check Twitter, Alec Rio and Connor Mathis behind the glass, we'll get on that. I forgot to check that before we hit the airwaves because I know it's not a great day today for golf. Not an ideal day, I should say. but I don't know if they've suspended it or moved tee times or whatnot, but at least after the first round on Monday, Michigan State in a tie for fourth place. All right. The Michigan softball team clinched the Big Ten regular season title on Sunday by winning its 11th straight game. The 22nd ranked Wolverines recorded a season high 18 hits to beat host Maryland, completing a 3-game weekend sweep. Michigan, which has won 2 straight Big Ten titles in 10 of the past 12, begins conference tournament play on Friday and will face the winner of number 8 seed Nebraska and number 9 seed Illinois in Bloomington, Indiana. I tell you, that Michigan softball program, pretty impressive, right? Led by the great Carol Hutchins. All right, after spending the past 2 years at the college level as an assistant at Lake Superior State, Sarah Holt is looking forward to again leading her own program, and that opportunity has now come for Holt at Okemos High School, where she has been hired as the varsity girls basketball coach. Holt replaces the great Kristen Rasmussen, who led the program to a 40-28 mark in her 3 seasons in charge. The Detroit Tigers will welcome back a familiar face tonight as former manager Brad Ausmus and the Los Angeles Angels will pay a visit to Comerica Park for a 3-game set. If the Tigers can win the series against their former manager, they'll at least get back to .500 on the season. All right, the NBA and NHL playoffs. In the NBA last night, as I mentioned, we saw the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Boston Celtics 113-101. And now the Bucks are just one win away from booking a ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals. Giannis Antetokounmpo, he has been absolutely fantastic. And I stick by what I stated earlier this season. I believe in 3 years, maybe even less, Giannis may be the best player in the national, well, I should say will be the best player in the National Basketball Association. Right now, though, I think that's Kevin Durant. All right, the Houston Rockets over the Golden State Warriors last night. Speaking of Kevin Durant, right? KD and the Warriors fell to Houston on the road, 112-108, your final last night. And, folks, we now have a tied series at 2 games apiece. Yeah, things just got really, really interesting in that series. All right, in the National Hockey League, the Boston Bruins have advanced with a 4-2 series win over the Columbus Blue Jackets, getting a shutout victory over Columbus last night, 3-0 your final. And the Colorado Avalanche beat the San Jose Sharks in overtime, 4-3, your final there. And that series now goes to a game 7, tied at 3 games apiece. Le'Veon Bell, the former Michigan State running back great who has become a stud in the National Football League, sat out all of last year, of course. Bell was a no-show for his new team, the New York Jets. Voluntary, and I stress the word voluntary. Voluntary minicamp, which began on April 23rd after he signed a 4-year, $52.5 million contract. When confronted by fans on social media yesterday, he provided some insight on his outlook, saying he'll put on the pads, quote, when it's time to play football, end quote. He goes on to say, I got to stick to the formula that I know works for me to be the best player I can be. I'll take the heat right now. Everybody will forget about that once January comes around. I'm not just trying to win football games. I want a ring. I want to desperately show everybody what I can really do. That's what Bell said in a response to a tweet, which basically said, when is Le'Veon Bell going to show up to practice? Now, again, voluntary workouts, not mandatory workouts. More on that story later on this hour. Vince McMahon's second go-around with the XFL will have the backing of ABC, ESPN, Fox Sports, and Fox Sports One. That's pretty big stuff, folks. Yeah, for its inaugural season's television schedule. Now, the league, along with each network, announced the multi-year deal to kick the week off Monday morning on May 6th, so yesterday. The first game will be broadcast 2 p.m. on February 8th on ABC and will be followed that same day with a 5 p.m. game, which can be viewed on Fox. More on that story in just a moment. And we also saw yesterday Tiger Woods received the nation's highest civilian honor by President Donald Trump, who described the 43-year-old as a, quote, true legend who transformed golf and then fought through years of injury to return to the sports summit. Now, Trump awarded Woods with the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Woods is the fourth golfer to earn that distinction and certainly the youngest. Now, while he dominated the sport for more than a decade, he won his first major in nearly 11 years last month in the Masters Tournament. We discussed that in length, of course. A comeback that captivated the sporting world and one that I believe to be the biggest comeback in the history of sports. And as you just heard me kind of summarize, Kentucky Derby winner, Country House, will not run in the Preakness on May 18th at Palenco Race Course in Baltimore. The Daily Racing Form reported that news not too long ago, less than 30 minutes ago to be exact. Country House trainer Bill Mott, he told Jay Privman of the Daily Racing Form that the Derby winner is coughing and acting like he's going to get sick. Now, the last Kentucky Derby winner to skip the Preakness was Grindstone, who was retired 5 days after winning the 1996 Derby because of a knee injury. The Daily Racing Form also reported today that Code of Honor runner-up in the Kentucky Derby will also not run in the Preakness. So you have the winner and the runner-up not able to go come Preakness time. More on that story later on this hour. Again, we will welcome to the show Michigan State professor Brian Nielsen from the Department of Animal Science to give us some insight into this Kentucky Derby madness. All right. And last but not least, I go behind the glass to Alec Rio for an update concerning Ken Holland. Now, Alec, we did touch on this story. Oh, I believe it was either Friday or I know it wasn't yesterday. It was last week concerning Ken Holland, you know, deciding to step down from the Red Wings. And we knew this move was kind of coming, right? What's the update?
Yeah, so when Steve Yzerman was announced as the Red Wings' new general manager, Detroit's former GM, Ken Holland, sat alongside him and said that he would be staying on as senior vice president. And Holland, who was with the Red Wings as general manager since 1997, the year I was born, had signed a 2-year extension before the end of last year. However, Holland will not be working with Yzerman because he has reportedly agreed to terms with the Edmonton Oilers for 5 years and $25 million to become their GM per Sportsnet's John Shannon. One of the hardest parts of Holland's job is already done, of course, as the Oilers have a generational superstar in Connor McDavid. He has 100-plus points in each of his past three seasons, and he has notched a career-high 116 points last season. Now, mind you, he's only 22 years old, so honestly, the ceiling is the sky, to be quite honest with him. Now, the Oilers, however, have faltered in recent seasons, missing the playoffs the past 2 years in spite of the emergence of another star in Leon Draisaitl last season. Now, Ken Holland has won 3 Stanley Cups as the GM and has definitely had his highs and lows when it came to acquisitions and trades, draft picks, and free agent signings. But, however, the city of Detroit wishes him nothing but the best in his endeavors with Edmonton.
At least most of them, right? Most Detroit fans.
Yeah.
So, again, Ken Holland, we saw this move coming. Holland officially heading over to Edmonton. All right, folks, that does it for your current sports quick hit headliners. We'll be touching on the NBA playoffs. We'll be touching on the Kentucky Derby controversy as we welcome live in studio Michigan State professor Brian Nielsen from the Department of Animal Science. And a big shout out to Regina Cross of the MSU Alumni Association for setting that up. Thank you so much, Regina. She's an avid listener of the show. And also, I'll be touching on Le'Veon Bell deciding to skip voluntary workouts. But first, we'll touch on the XFL. And I also want to go back in history just for a moment. Let's keep this train a pushing.
Sellers has Jordan. Jordan with 2 seconds to go. Puts it up. It's good! At the buzzer, Michael Jordan has won it for Chicago. The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it! Set the Cleveland Cavaliers. Michael Jordan hits it at the foul line. 101-100.
Not one to do an awful lot of boasting, but you had some boasts to make to a few Chicago writers about this series.
A lot of people put us out of this whole series, and I opened my mouth a little bit, and I challenged the guys, I challenged myself to say we could win in 4, but we didn't win in 4, we won in 5. I don't care how many we won every one. That's all that counts.
My last question. There's a pregame ritual that you go through. You're back in the locker room by yourself. There's a song that plays, and you said that was going to be your theme. What's that song that you listen to?
Anita Baker, Give It Your Best. Just go out and give it to y'all.
Be fitting to begin our discussion period here on WKAR's Current Sports by touching on one of the most iconic moments in the career of the GOAT, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, because today marks 30 years, the 30-year anniversary of Jordan's shot over Craig Elo. You know, and that play right there, in order to fully understand Jordan's greatness, you got to look beyond the unbelievable stats and the countless accolades. Because when you look at a moment like that, you know, MJ defined his career with clutch moments like that playoff game winner over Cleveland's Craig Elo 30 years ago today. One of the clutchest shots in NBA history. It's really iconic. I mean, there have been many commercials made about that moment and documentaries detailing that moment. It lives in Cleveland nightmares, without a doubt. You know, as Jordan hits that shot and he hung in the air. What's amazing about that, when you look at the highlight, you know, Jordan like hangs in the air. Elo's right there and he begins to fall as Jordan still is rising. And it's almost like a pump fake in the air. And Jordan gets it off. It goes in. And then he turns around and gives a huge fist pump as he jumps. Like it seemed like 50 feet in the air. Just amazing. Absolutely amazing. So 30 years ago today, mark that moment. And the shot came in a series deciding. If you remember back in the day, it didn't go seven in those early rounds. That was a series deciding game five for the Bulls. If Jordan misses that pull-up, the Bulls get bounced in the first round. Amazing stuff. All right, I want to shift gears now, and I just want to touch on this before I give thoughts on the NBA playoffs before hitting our first break. But the XFL announced a multi-year deal with a few television networks. The XFL has announced that it has agreements with ESPN and Fox Sports, and there will be weekly games on ABC and Fox, as well as games on ESPN, ESPN2, FS1, and FS2. And this is pretty big because, you know, I look at the XFL, and when it was announced that the XFL was coming back, I said to myself, oh boy, here we go again. You know, Vince McMahon is going to try this experiment again. Didn't we see this already fail? So what makes the thinking different here that this time around, the XFL is going to be a success, especially when we just saw a matter of weeks ago. You know, what was that league called? Connor Mathis in studio here joining me for this conversation. Was that the AAF?
AAF.
The AAF, right? We just saw the AAF absolutely fold and fail. I believe they declared for bankruptcy?
They declared for bankruptcy, and they're in a lot of trouble with a bunch of people suing them.
Right, and they had some big-time players there. I remember, you know, Johnny Football commented, Johnny Manziel, he was a member of that league, and he went on the record to say this is very unfortunate, and you know, when looking at the details of that report when it came out, I mean, the situation was so dire that, you know, there were certain teams of the AAF that didn't know how they were getting to the game next week because of travel arrangements and how each ball club was just short on money. I mean, it was an absolute tragedy.
And it would have happened 2 months prior if it weren't for the donation of a ton of money by, I think, I was either the GM or the CEO of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Which was a huge mistake in hindsight, right?
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness, the league is folded. So I look at this and I say to myself, okay, the fact that the XFL, and maybe this is good for the XFL because now they can learn from the mistakes of the AAF. But this is the big thing that a lot of people got to keep in mind here when discussing these hybrid football leagues out there. You are going against or trying to go against the most powerful league in the nation. Yeah, football, soccer may dominate internationally, but here in America, we all know what moves the needle. And you guys know I'm a big NBA fan, and the NBA is certainly rising in popularity and becoming one of the fastest growing sports in terms of popularity. But still, nothing here in America, sporting-wise, moves the needle quite like the National Football League. The National Football League dominates. So when you talk about the AAF and now you talk about the XFL, you are trying to, you know, draw eyeballs away from the NFL. But the thing is, the good thing is here, and they're trying to do it in a clever way. You know, you have the XFL season going on when the National Football League isn't going on. And that's the only way you're going to survive here. But the fact of the matter is, when looking at the schedule, you will be going against college basketball during the season as well, and March Madness. I don't know why they decided to have it around that time period, but it is what it is. But I will say this, it's surprising to me, Connor, that they were able to get ESPN and Fox Sports on board with these TV contracts. With that being said, and with this new news coming across, do you think that this changes your perception on exactly how successful the XFL will be?
I still think it's going to be a mess. If for nothing else, you know, they have the broadcasting.
And how do you define mess? Do you say it folds before the season even ends or what? No,
I think it'll probably do what happened last time. It'll probably last the season, and I think it'll fold. Not because of broadcasting issues. Not because of, you know, just how it's going to have to compete with all the other sports. I think because one thing that hasn't been addressed since McMahon came back out and said it was their personnel policy, their player personnel policy is pretty harsh compared even to the NFL. There was a statement that McMahon would bring in no one with a criminal record, which, again, in a perfect world, in a great world, that's a great thing to say. But if you look at the pool of players, to find enough players to consistently keep you going and enough names to say, be like, oh man, I like that guy. This is a good player that are squeaky clean. It's almost impossible. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's sustainable. And the other thing I think they have going against them too is the AAF for its failures at least played in like markets where there wasn't football,
right?
So a Birmingham, an Orlando.
Well, I think that hurt them.
I don't know
those are markets that are so small.
There are some
you got to go after the big markets if you want to draw eyeballs, Connor. And I think that was a mistake going after these markets that aren't, you know, typically sports crazed like that. I mean, it just kind of turned me off when it came to AAF.
I think it helped them in terms of teams like the Iron, who are really good in the AAF, and they don't have professional football there. They have Alabama, but they have nothing else. I think it can work if you do it right. But I don't think putting a tier two team in a Dallas, in a Seattle, in an LA, where there's an established team, where there are good teams there. I don't think that'll help them. I think they'll have better luck finding like places that still want a football team, but don't have one to begin with. Because
that's interesting. And the thing is, I mean, you know, because the AAF was going regionally, and they were, like you just stated, they were going for these small markets. In order to get anybody in the seats, you have to establish. First off, you got to establish the league, and that only comes with time. Mm-hmm. And if you fold in your first year, it's kind of hard to do that, right? But you know, the question is, I mean, because no matter, you know, when it comes to the XFL, when we're discussing the AAF, when it was in its first year, it's always going to be in your mind, well, this product is not the NFL. Mm-hmm. And that's always going to be there. I don't know if you can ever defeat that subconscious thought when it comes to the football fan. The only way you're going to do it, and this is the thing I want to harp on, what you just stated, Connor, you got to sell it with names. You got to get names that maybe were big at some point that now have a second chance at playing the game of football, and you got to market the heck out of them. And if they do it right, getting ESPN and Fox Sports on board, that may help the XFL.
I think Yeah, that's a good point. Another big problem with the AAF is they didn't have names.
I didn't see any marketing. I didn't see any commercials.
On like the TNTs, the small players. When they actually got on regular TV, there wasn't big things. They didn't have big names, right, which is why it's even more important to me that personnel policy, it's going to kill them. Because if you get a big name and he screws up, whatever crime it may be, or alleged crime, or whatever issue may come up, right, and the policy is he's gone, you can't build on that. There's not enough of a pool of saying, these guys are squeaky clean, and they're going to draw eyeballs, and they're really good.
I don't think they have to be, you know, depending on the situation, mm-hmm, I'll say this. They don't have to be squeaky clean, because drama sells. That's why ratings are up when it comes to reality TV, and you look at Real Housewives of Atlanta and Love and Hip Hop. That's why people watch those shows, because of drama. If you have a compelling name, a compelling figure, but the thing is, this is the XFL with multiple teams. You have to have a player like that for just about, 80 to 90% of your league, and that's tough to do.
Or at least half of it.
Yeah. Right. So, but, you know, the way they're marketing this, XFL Spring Saturdays, you know, ESPN and Fox, and Fox, and it looks as though they're giving the XFL kind of like an NFL-type treatment, just as the NFL has its 1 p.m. and 4:15 p.m. windows on fall Sundays. For 7 of 8 Saturdays beginning on February 8th, XFL games will air at 2 p.m. on ABC and 5 p.m. on Fox. Interesting marketing method there. So, and then you look at the XFL's official Twitter page. Football in February? Beautiful, isn't it? And it has a list of the 2020 television schedule. So, we'll see. I want to know your thoughts. Listeners out there, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Before I get to our first break and we bring on our in-studio guest, Connor, we'll bring you back on for the NBA playoffs, excuse me. I wish it was the NFL playoffs. That'd be awesome, right?
That'd be great.
Near the back end of the show, because I want to get your thoughts on what you saw last night when it came to the main event of the Houston Rockets and Golden State Warriors. We'll get to that later on this hour. But first, I do want to get to our phone lines. We've got Ben Grimes on the phone to talk about the Battlefield Brawl that took place on Saturday. I wasn't able to attend, but Ben, welcome to the show. How was it Saturday, man?
It was interesting. I got up on Sunday morning, and we went over there at about 9 or 9:30, and we showed up, and there wasn't hardly anybody there, so I was a little concerned. And we ended up running into one of the female people that was in charge at the time. And she told me there was some bad communication all the way around with setting things up and getting things started and getting teams there that played last year to play this year, and that they weren't going to show up to play this year. And so there was only like 10 or 12 of us there. And then I waited around to see if my team was going to show up, because there were only three of us there for my team, and by noon there was seven teams there, and so they only did like a 3 or 4 team tournament. But I left knowing that I wasn't going to play, because there was enough players from each team there to not have subs. But anyway, when we got ready to leave, we ran into the woman I talked to before, and I found out that it was Amber. And I had messaged her the night before, and she was the one that told me there was bad communication all the way around with people on the board and people that were involved last year setting up and things like that. And so I gave her my opinion on how things should be done, or how I felt could be better for next year. And so it was just craziness.
It could have been a better experience. Well, in defense of the brawl as well, Ben, and you know, I've been a part of it, you know, for about 5 years. I wasn't able to attend last year, and of course not on Sunday either. And for those that don't know what the Battlefield Brawl is, it's put on by former Michigan State football great Todd, formerly known as TJ Duckett. And they raise money for charity, and they have local teams come out to participate in the flag football tournament. It's always fun every single year. And I know they moved it to Lansing Sexton High School this weekend. Am I correct in saying that, Ben? Right?
Yep.
It was at Lansing Sexton High School. So, well, hopefully we see some improvements next year, man. And I know it's always cool, and I haven't been there for 2 years. I got to be there next year, and I always enjoy running into our listeners like you at that event. So let's just cross our fingers for next year, all right, Ben?
Yep.
You got it, man. Thank you. Thank you for the call. Yep. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will dive more into the controversy that has been the Kentucky Derby What we saw on Saturday evening was truly one of a kind. In the 145-year history of the Derby, we will welcome live here in studio Michigan State professor Brian Nielsen from the Department of Animal Science. He has been involved in the horse racing industry and has been a licensed race horse trainer since the late 90s. We'll invite Brian live here in Studio West. That conversation and more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Folks, we have been talking about this since yesterday's Current Sports. We actually led the show with the Kentucky Derby. And for those who tuned in to the Derby on Saturday evening, you saw something that has really never happened before in the history of the Derby. Country House ended up being named the winner due to Maximum Security being disqualified by racing stewards due to the fact that Maximum Security basically did not stay in his lane. He impeded a few other horses. It went into a review, and then it came out that Country House was the horse placed in the winner's circle as he was initially the runner-up in that race. And news broke, I kid you not, folks, about 8 minutes before we took the airwaves, that Bill Mott, the trainer of Kentucky Derby winner Country House, he told the Daily Racing Form that Country House will not race in the Preakness Stakes because he has become, quote, ill. So I want to dive into this with a man who certainly knows a lot about the world of horse racing. And again, much thanks to Regina Cross for setting this up of the MSU alumni board. You know, she reached out to me. She tuned into yesterday's Current Sports. She heard our conversation to lead Monday's show, and she said, you know what? I've got a guy who I think you want to have on the show to elaborate more on this. I think he'll be a great guest for you. And we do have him live in Studio West right now. He is a professor here at Michigan State University from the Department of Animal Science. And as I mentioned, he has been involved with the horse racing industry and has been a licensed racehorse trainer since 1997. It's my pleasure to welcome to Current Sports Brian Nielsen. Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Al. I really appreciate being here. You can imagine how this has impacted those of us that have been in the industry, and ever since the race became official, there's been a lot of us kind of in shock as to what just happened.
And I'm sure a lot of conversations surrounded around the horse racing community and your buddies who are also, you know, in the horse racing community. I just want to know first, I'll start here, Brian. What was your initial reaction after watching Maximum Security crossed the finish line as the winning horse, and then upon hearing that, we're going to look at this again. What was your, well, just take me through your thought process when you were watching the race.
Sure, I'll give you a little bit more background. So I have, for a number of years, been doing predictions. So I teach courses in equine exercise physiology as well as advanced horse management. And my students always ask, given my racehorse background, you know, who do I like in the Derby? So a number of years ago, I started to make my pick. And, and then with the advent of Facebook, I started doing those on Facebook. Yeah, and of course you do it before the Derby, not afterwards, because everybody can brag how oh yeah, I had that horse. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure. Right.
Right. And anyway, and I've had great success. I'm actually a pretty good handicapper. I've done handicapping seminars at tracks across the United States.
Mm-hmm. What's handicapping?
Where you're teaching people how to pick which horses will be successful.
Gotcha. Okay.
I don't want to say bet, because I don't care whether you put $2 down or not. I just love the challenge of picking the right horse.
Right.
And I've been very successful. And again, I narrow it down to the horse. And in the last 14 years, 10 times I've picked the horse that's crossed the finish line first. That's how I have to word it this week.
Right.
I would have normally said I've picked it correctly 10 times, but I don't know if this is a win or not.
Exactly.
Because I certainly thought Maximum Security was the horse. So as the race was unfolding, I mean, I did see him veer out a little bit, and I just cringed. I mean, I was, come on, boy, come on, boy.
And so then you noticed it initially.
I noticed him veer out, absolutely. And my biggest fear was, you know, you could have a horse really move out a long ways. I've seen him go completely to the outside and lose any chance of winning.
Right.
And that was my fear. Again, I had my ego on the line.
Right.
And, and then he strained up. I was like, cool, come on, baby. And I mean, I was screaming so loud. I lost my voice. I was pumped. I was excited. And I've never bet on the Derby.
Never bet on the Derby.
Never did. This year, I actually contemplated earlier that morning of putting a substantial bet on it because I was that confident in this horse. And then later on that afternoon, I was actually out riding one of my racehorses, and I was listening to some Derby talk, and I realized his odds were dropping. People were catching on that this is the right horse, and I was like, I'm not going to risk the money.
Okay.
And so I didn't have any money on it, but I still had ego, and he crossed the line, and I was just so pumped because it was exactly as I had predicted the race to go. I even commented I didn't think the horse would be dirty at all,
wow.
And I thought the rain would – everything.
You were spot on with this prediction.
And I even said at the end of my analysis of him, this could be a cool story. Because he could have been claimed for $16,000. His dad's stud fee was $5,000. In terms of rich, expensive horses, this horse would not have fit that category. He is, of course, now probably worth a lot more. but I thought this could be a cool story. What I didn't realize is this is going to be a huge story and not for the right reasons. And of course, as you're well aware, the whole decision, you know, again, celebrating for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden, uh-oh.
Right.
And they're showing the replays, and the horse certainly veered out some.
So it was the right call. We'll start looking back at the video, because
sure.
I didn't know, and this is another point that the trainers and the owner of Country House made when looking at this whole situation. Well, I should say a Maximum Security made when looking at this whole situation. You know, he made the comment that the Kentucky Derby has gotten greedy. Having 20 horses race in the Kentucky Derby, an occurrence like this was bound to happen. What are your thoughts on that, and did you think it was the right call?
So you got two questions there, and I'll address the owner's comments regarding the 20 horses in the Derby. True, that's a lot of horses. We don't do that here in the States, but we do it for the Derby, and that's how it's done. And you entered, and you knew those were the rules, and you had two of the horses in there. Mm-hmm. Shut up. So the thing is, you know, don't be classy on this, and you're going to have a lot more fans. And that was, and I understand it. They took a million plus. I don't know what the horse makes, 1.6 million or something.
Yeah,
if you
win
the Derby,
around there.
Some you lost a lot of money, and you lost winning the Derby, which for all of us, that's a huge dream. So again, be classy, and we'll come back to the being classy comment in a little bit. Mm-hmm. So 20 horses in the field. Yes, that's a lot. Actually, it's only 19 ran. Still, that's a lot of horses. But you knew it was the way, and yes, there's traffic in it. So I don't know about that. But the stewards, when faced with what they are, and the stewards are the officials that have to make the decisions, when you look at it, he impeded the horses to his side behind him. And so they were forced to make the right call. And now that's the issue I have is the real – first of all, there's a lot of people that were victims in here. And by victims, I mean I feel sorry for them. I feel bad for the stewards because they – I'm going to guess that they sat there for 20, 25 minutes trying to find a way not to take him down because they knew they were going to anger a lot of people and disappoint a lot of people.
And I can only imagine the amount of money
that changed hands
in those moments, right?
Yes.
Oh.
Unbelievable. And you don't make many people happy with that calling. I mean, here was a horse that, you know, I really thought this horse had Triple Crown potential.
Right.
He was undefeated. He was magnificent. Won by huge amounts. We really didn't know how good he was. What I loved is when he was challenged in that race, and he'd never been challenged yet, I mean, he looked the other horses in the eyes and said, see you, boys. and it was his race. So you had a horse that had the potential for another Triple Crown winner. I mean, we had this long dry spell of those, and now suddenly they're coming out left and right, which is so fun.
Right.
And it's great for our industry. Now, the people watching the Preakness, it's an afterthought. The Belmont, it's an afterthought. So from the horse racing industry, it looks bad. I feel bad because the stewards had to make that decision. Of course, I feel bad for the connections of Maximum Security, who won the Derby and then had it taken away. And actually, a person I feel bad for, or at least I did a little bit more until recently, the rider of Country House. And the reason I feel bad for him is he's 26 years old. Okay.
He's really young.
I'm getting to be an old guy. You know, I'm 51, 26. You know, I remember, and sometimes you do dumb things when you're 26. And what he did that was dumb was calling foul. And the reason that was dumb is he was on a horse that ran second in the Kentucky Derby at 65-1 odds. Dude, you're a hero. You did something fantastic.
Right.
You weren't impeded, and you called foul. All righty. That's a loser approach right there. Mm-hmm. The only reason he did it, and he understood what he was doing, is if he calls fouls, that requires the stewards to review the race. They hadn't.
And he was, this is the thing. This is so key because the Country House wasn't one of the horses, right, that had issues with Maximum Security getting out of its lane and impeding some kind of motion in the race.
Exactly.
But he decided to call foul.
Yes.
And that led to the whole review.
Absolutely.
A horse that had nothing to do with that situation.
Thank you.
Who became runner-up. So you thought that was the wrong move. That was kind of bitter, right? That was kind of like, come on, man.
Absolute wrong move. That was so classless. It was smart. It allowed him to win the Derby. But in the long run, that was extremely stupid.
What kind of ripple effect would that have on his career?
I'll tell you what. I would never ride him.
Really?
I would never put him on a horse because I'm like, dude, you just hurt the horse racing industry by doing something that classless. That was not sportsmanship. That was gamesmanship, but that wasn't sportsmanship.
Right.
He was gaming the system. He said, I'm going to make those stewards look at this. They're going to take him down, and I'll win the Kentucky Derby. And so, yes, he made, $187,000 for that move. But he may have really hurt his career in ways that you'll never know for a long time. And actually, I would worry about, very seriously, about his mental health. You know, some of these jockeys, the deal is if you look at them, most of them come from other countries. These days, the top level ones, it's so hard to make weight. You look at me and you're thinking, yeah, you're a little guy.
How big are you? For those that can't see you,
five, six,
how many pounds?
I'd like to say 138 right now. I'm probably 140. That's higher than I want to be. I'm also a runner, and so I take my weight very seriously.
And what's the size, Brian, of an average jockey?
Somewhere for these thoroughbred jocks, probably 113, 150.
Yeah, they're really small.
Yeah. This is why I love the sport, because I'm too big to do it professionally. Ba-dum-bum-tsh.
There you go, right?
So the thing is, but oftentimes they come from other countries, some of them third world countries, because they've been malnourished, so they're smaller.
Right.
And so the thing is I have no idea why I was bringing that up, except...
we were just kind of making the point about, the life of a jockey and the mental health
of
a jockey. Yeah.
So good. Sometimes I get going down the yellow brick road, I lose my way,
fine.
And somebody needs to bring me
back.
But
you're concerned about his mental health. Why?
Yeah, and the thing is so oftentimes they're not educated, and they might not have the support structure, not necessarily their family around them and all that stuff. I'm going to guess this guy's going to, if he pays attention to social media at all, he's going to understand he's not a well-liked person. And we have seen jockeys that have committed suicide before.
Wow, really?
Just because some of them get mixed up with drugs and things like that. It's a hard life. And especially if you have to maintain weight, so, you're starving yourself. It's not an easy job.
It kind of sounds like the life of a boxer, like a prize fighter. Even though you're not, we look at horses as these prize fighters, right?
But a lot of
jockey
similarity.
Goes through, some really tough strain. Throughout
absolutely.
Their life. Absolutely. Well. I didn't notice that.
I have a lot of them that are friends, and I've seen, the lives. And now some of these guys live great lives, and, they're living at the top of the world, and things are going great for them. But it can be a really tough life. And so somebody like that who might not have that support structure around them and people, they become your best friend when you're successful, and then when you're not, they may part ways with them. I would really worry about that. Now, when I was looking up his age, the other thing I noticed is he's from France. Mm-hmm. Okay. So why does that come into play? And some people, the French are rude. Not saying that, folks. if you want to, whatever. But actually, more so, we kind of have a tradition here regarding the Kentucky Derby. And Bob Baffert, who, if you follow horse racing,
he's a big wig in the world.
He's great.
Yeah, right.
And his quote was something to the effect of, we don't call foul in the Kentucky Derby. And so the thing is no. If he was the horse, the jockey on War of Wills, who really had to take up. If that jockey wanted to claim foul.
You understand that.
Absolutely. That makes sense, because that was a horse that had a legitimate shot to be up there, who did get taken out by that or had to really pull up on it. I would have had no problem with that. You're the guy on the outside who wasn't interfered with. You just knew you would win the Derby if you can get this other horse taken down. People aren't going to like you for that. And we don't do that with that race. Now, if this is, as Bill Mott, the trainer of Country House, said, you know, if this was, you know, a $5,000 maiden claiming at Turfway Park, sure, that would have happened. But you had the whole nation and millions of people all over the world tuning into this. You know, I have friends in other countries that were watching, you know, through Facebook. We can keep track, and they're all commenting.
Right.
Everybody's watching this. So many people like this. It would have been a great story, and you ruined it for everybody.
So I got to know, Brian, again, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Michigan State Professor Brian Nielsen from the Department of Animal Science. He has been involved in the horse racing industry and has been a licensed racehorse trainer since 1997. Brian, do you think any modifications should happen in how a possible situation like this down the road should be handled in the future?
Yeah, a couple things. So there's some talk that in other countries except Canada and the United States, the stewards actually have the option to use their best judgment as to whether a horse that was impeded could have beat the horse that impeded them. Mm-hmm. And so, for instance, in this case, would Long Range Toddy, the horse that finished last, and that's why Maximus Carity was placed last, is because he had to be placed after Long Shot Toddy, who he impeded. Otherwise, he would have, you know, if he only impeded Country House, who he never touched.
I keep saying that, right?
Yeah. If he would have done that, he would move to second place. But because the horse that he impeded, one of the horses he impeded a little bit, finished last, they had to move him behind him. So people think, oh, it was horrible that what he did, and that's why they just disqualified him from the race. They didn't disqualify him from the race. They put him behind a horse he impeded. But in these other countries, the rule, as I understand it, is the especially if it's unintentional. I mean, this was just a horse shying from something. You know, you see the tire track on the deal. And also,
is this real common? Because, you know, we're talking about animals here.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about horses.
Yes.
You know, sometimes it's unpredictable what they do during a race. So this is not uncommon to see in a race. Then.
Well, and in fact, one of the reviews of the race that I was looking at, something that I think may have happened, just conjecture. There's lots of things. Weather is noise. When you're looking down at the track, I mean, it's been rainy, and that tire track, it's a long line of shiny stuff. And you can actually see the lights from above shining down. And because, you know, it's overcast, and so they have the, you know, the stadium lights or whatever you want to call them up.
Right.
And that glare that horse sees is certainly a reason why the horse might try to detour around it. That's not the fault of anybody. That's called, there were puddles. I actually had a horse that I was racing myself. When I say that, one of my horses, and I actually had to send him off to a different trainer because we don't have racing for thoroughbreds or quarter horses, which is what I do here in Michigan anymore. So I had to send my horse to a friend down in Indianapolis to run him at Indiana Grand last year. And this was the horse's first race, and it's at night, and they had torrential rains. My trainer friend said, don't even bother coming down here because I'm sure they're going to cancel the race.
Wow.
They didn't. And I figured the odds of my horse doing good are very slim because it's at night and you have the lights on and the track surface is just pure wet.
That reflection bothers the horse.
So you have lights above and you also have lights from the ground. And my horse, he didn't run great at all.
Right.
But that's normal. That's for a horse. And so, like, if he's looking down and he's seeing the reflection of the light, that could have been what caused him to veer off just a little bit, but enough where he impeded the other horse. So that type of stuff absolutely can happen. And
So how do they handle this in the future?
Oh, should there be thank any you for changes? Bringing me back. This is why you're the guy
I'm
in
the
controls
host, right?
You bet. So they would have the option to only change the order of finish if the horse that was impeded potentially could have beat that horse.
Gotcha.
So in this case, things would have stayed the same.
Would have stayed the same.
You bet. You know, the other little thing that I'll bring up here, and I'll tell you a court case that I was actually involved with.
Okay.
So in, I think it was 2009, a horse won the All-American Futurity, which is the richest quarter horse race. This is down in New Mexico. You win that, you win $1 million. And everything turned out fine. They paid the owner $1 million. And then about a month or so later, they said, oh, we ran the blood test and the horse came up positive for caffeine. Give us the $1 million back. You can understand that doesn't sit real well. And the interesting thing there is New Mexico has a zero tolerance rule, which is a nice idea on the surface, which is we do drug testing, and if you have any trace of anything, you can be disqualified. And anyway, so they said, give us $1 million back. And so then suddenly there's a court case, and I'm actually called in to testify. So again, I'm an equine exercise physiologist here.
This is huge.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. and so it was interesting because, one, caffeine certainly can have an influence on performance, but it's endurance performance as opposed to sprint. And that race is 440 yards. It's like 20-some seconds. It's absolutely drag racing for horse racing. I love it. Those horses reach peak speeds of like 55 miles per hour.
Oh my goodness. I love
riding racing quarter horses. But the deal is there's been no scientific evidence that it helps with sprinting. So, one, it doesn't matter. And the amount of caffeine in that horse's system would be the equivalent of a teaspoon of coffee.
Okay, like what I have in my cup right now. This is like my performance enhancer right here.
You got way more caffeine
way
in there.
Way too much. Yeah.
That means you should be able to beat Usain Bolt right there.
Okay, bring him on.
Come on, buddy. Usain. So, the deal was is the amount of caffeine there was like nothing.
Yeah.
But the deal is there is this zero tolerance rule that was in place. Now, that rule is stupid because environmental contamination, and that's actually what we were able to show, was the likelihood of it being environmental contamination was huge. Won't bore you with all the details. The other thing is the amount in his system was so negligible that it wouldn't have made a difference. Now, I bring all this up because zero tolerance does not mean that if you have a traceable amount, you are automatically disqualified. What it means is the stewards have the option to consider whether or not it would have had an influence.
And so,
end of that story, that horse is fine. He got to keep the $1 million. Life was good.
Okay, good.
But the deal is I think they've gotten rid of the zero tolerance rule because it's stupid because our testing is so great these days.
Right.
But sometimes we have to allow wisdom to be in place, people to use common sense. This horse was going to win regardless. Nobody else was going to beat him. It should not have changed. But the stewards had to do what I think they had to do.
It was the right move. From when looking at it, at the end of the day, if this foul was called and you got to look at it and make a call, they made the right call. But man, does this hurt the perception of horse racing right now. Well, we got to have you back. Brian, you were absolutely outstanding, my man. When the Preakness is set to race, can we have you back on
the
airwaves to talk about it?
You bet, definitely.
Outstanding job. Again, Michigan State Professor Brian Nielsen from the Department of Animal Science. Folks, you don't really need to go anywhere else, right? To get commentary on what happened on Saturday, that pretty much sums it up. Brian with an outstanding job there. We'll see you on Wednesday, folks. Same time, same place. I'm your host, Al Martin. And as always, be easy, people.